DW Africa Link.
The M23 rebellion has once again seized parts of eastern DRC, displacing thousands and fueling tensions across the region. Accusations are flying. Kinshasa blames Rwanda, even though Rwanda has categorically denied supporting the rebels. However, Rwandan President Paul Kagame has in the past admitted that his troops are inside DRC to protect his country from attacks. Meanwhile, Congolese civilians are caught in the crossfire, paying the ultimate price for a conflict that seems to have no end. The conflict is not straightforward, with questions of foreign interference, government failures, and deeper geopolitical games at play. So, who is responsible for M23's resurgence? The answers aren't simple, but breaking them down is crucial. Stay tuned. My name is Josie Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
In early February, the M23, which claims to protect ethnic Tutsis, took control of Goma, the capital of North Kivu province bordering Rwanda. It has since thrust into neighboring South Kivu and vowed to march on Kinshasa's capital. Since the M23's re-emergence in 2021, various ceasefires and truces have collapsed. The city's fall of 1 million people gives M23 total control of the Kivu region following its capture of Goma, the capital of neighboring North Kivu province, at the end of January. This has had a devastating impact on the DRC and its people, with many civilians caught in their crossfire and forced to flee their homes. Growing international calls have been made for Rwanda to end its military backing for M23, though it still denies that its troops are in the DRC. So what does this renewed push by M23 mean for the DRC and its people, and who is to blame? Gonza Muganwa, a political and social commentator on the Great Lakes region, joins me for the discussion, as well as DW's Alex Ngarambe in Kigali, Rwanda. Let's start with you, Gonza. The DRC has denounced UN Security Council's inaction over M23 capture of Bukavu. But we know that Tshisekedi's government kicked out MONUSCO and the East African Standby Brigade. So one would just say, what an irony, isn't it?
The Congolese government, after losing the battlefield, have increased their diplomatic campaign to force the international community to put pressure on Rwanda and the M23 to stop fighting. But there is a little chance that will produce results, as the rebels are gaining advantage. They have recruited many soldiers from the government army and they are deploying them on the front already. So they have the advantage. Indeed, as you say, it is ironic, because if the Tshisekedi government had not expelled the East African force that had been sent in, the situation wouldn't have escalated to this level.
Right. From your explanation now, Gonza, it's clear that dialogue should be the only solution right now. And even regional leaders have called for dialogue to solve this crisis. Still, surprisingly or unsurprisingly, whichever way you may want to put it or see it, Congolese President Felix Tshisekedi has adamantly refused dialogue with M23. How do you see this panning out? Can we say that dialogue has failed to resolve the crisis in eastern DRC? Let's also even look at the fact that Tshisekedi has boycotted all recent regional summits. AU, he wasn't there. In Tanzania, he wasn't there. In Zimbabwe, he wasn't there. But he was recently seen here at the Munich Security Conference.
I think dialogue has not failed, even though there is a history of many agreements being signed and not respected. That's why the M23 is even named after March 23rd, because there was an agreement signed in 2009 to end fighting during that era. It was never implemented. However, yes, as the regional leaders have emphasized, the dialogue is in an ordinary way because fighting leads to serious humanitarian crisis. But for Tshisekedi, it is a bit complex because he campaigned for the election on insisting that he not talk to the M23, regards them as terrorists and proxy of Rwanda, and he said he would only talk to the Rwandan government. There have indeed been a dialogue, there were talks taking place in Rwanda, Angola, and a framework agreement had been reached and was supposed to be signed in December last year, but was not signed because there was one element that the Rwandan government couldn't accept.
Mm-hmm. And Alex, you are a reporter on ground in Kigali, Rwanda. How closely are Rwandans following developments in Eastern DRC and what are they saying exactly on ground?
Thanks, Josie. Yeah, indeed, the Rwandans are following this development closely because whatever happens in Congo directly affects Rwanda on the other side of the border. And especially the most recent fighting in the north of Kivu, in Goma, and in the south of Kivu, that is in Bukavu, because we saw that there was direct sharing from the Congolese side into the Rwandan territory, and Rwanda registered deaths and casualties. And yes, so leave alone this particular fighting, but if you go back in history, you see that Rwanda and Congo for the last 30 years, say, if we give it context, the insecurity has been at almost at its height. They have always been fighting, so many militia groups. So it has affected Rwanda closely and directly, and Rwandans are always cautious and they are always interested to know what is going on, what is the development, because if you look at the trade business, the Rubavu-Goma border post has been one of the busiest borders in East Africa in terms of trade and population crossing. That has since stopped, let's say for the last 5 years maybe. There has been no direct trade, and the economy of both cities has been affected. And yes, there's of course the anxiety of the war. They don't know what the future holds. They can't predict the future. They don't know how it's going to end, if there are going to be any spillovers into Rwandan territory. Although President Kagame has been very strongly assuring Rwandans that they can sleep soundly. But well, the fears in the Rwandan people, they are there. And there have been consequences, of course, in terms of trade, in terms of human loss, in so many aspects, basically. So the Rwandans are following it closely and with a keen interest, because this has been one of the toughest wars, if we are to say, because in the last 30 years, we have seen that the Tutsi-leaning movement in Eastern DRC previously it captured Goma, but it did not stay in that city for long. It was forced to retreat and go back to their bases. But this time round, we see that they have captured Goma and they have held it firm and they have moved southwards. They are capturing other major cities and strategic points like airports and border posts. So there's a lot to be anxious about from the Rwandan side. Yeah, so Rwandans are closely monitoring, and given the history of both countries, really, they have people on the other side of the border, they have their relatives on this side of the border, some of their relatives are in refugee camps. So it is of serious interest for the Rwandan people and the Rwandan government.
Yeah, it can be surprising, Alex, because we've been seeing a lot of social media videos trending on different platforms of M23 soldiers taking over of towns. What are people saying about this? What is the mood like?
The mood in Rwanda is calm. Rwanda is largely peaceful. Maybe you can say a few days of the first week when they attacked Goma, when M23 marched on Goma, I think that's when we could see a few shellings coming from the Congolese side to the Rwandan territory. But largely Rwanda is calm, largely Rwanda is peaceful, people are going about their business. The biggest problem should be on the other side of the border into DRC. But on the social media posts and videos making rounds, yes, Rwandans have been very active on social media. They are clearly showing what they think is going on. Basically, their narrative is not different from what the Rwandan narrative is. Everything they post on social media, all these social media accounts, posting videos, posting photos and messages. They are trying to show that Rwanda is the victim. Whatever happens in Congo is the sole responsibility of the Congolese government. It is the failure of the Congolese government to stabilize their country. President of the Rwanda shouldn't be blamed. We can say the social media is really awash with what is happening in Eastern DRC.
Mm-hmm. We also understand there's an ongoing campaign of Rwandans supporting President Paul Kagame with the hashtag We Are Together. What more can you tell us about this campaign and the people behind it, Alex?
Yes, this campaign, we have seen it emerging, especially recently after the escalation of these conflicts in Eastern Congo. Hashtag popular known as, like you said, We Are Together, or commonly in Kenya, Rwanda, known as Turikumwe. And these accounts, you can't tell who is behind them. You can't tell whether the government has a hand in it. You can't tell whether they are individuals who are coming up to stand with the president, stand with the country, because that's what the message is saying. Anyway, that it is encouraging people to show more patriotism at this time. So it is very difficult to know if they are organized groups and there's somebody organizing them, let's say from government or from individuals in the government. All these are indeed patriotic young Rwandans who are taking to social media to show solidarity with the president and the country, because many of them are very clear. The message is clear. They are actually calling out their fellow youth, their celebrities, superstars in Rwanda, that you are silent. What are you doing at this time? You were very active during the campaigns for the president to be reelected. They gave you money to sing on these concerts and these rallies, election rallies. Now, at this time, you are so silent. Where are you? So they are really encouraging other youth, the celebrities, to join this bandwagon and call upon the international community to see that Rwanda is innocent in this fight in the Eastern DRC, that the president is innocent in the fighting in the Eastern DRC. So it is very difficult to know if they are well-organized and coordinated groups of people, or indeed if they are young patriots who are trying to really show that they care and Rwanda is blamed for no reason. So it is still not known, but there are really, really so many, and they are gaining traction. They are gaining numbers. They are not about to stop. So that's what it is basically on the social media here.
Now, in a country where dissent is unheard of, is there a section of Rwandans who are concerned about Rwanda's involvement or support of the M23 rebels?
The concern is mainly seen in the government offices up there, because the government is clearly accused in all this conflict. So the government is concerned about what is happening in the international community, the pressure they are getting from the international community, from the regional blocs. But as citizens, I don't see many of them concerned and, let's say, worried and fearful. Maybe they are concerned, but they are concealing it. They are not trying to show that they have the fear, because maybe the government has assured them of the security and they don't want to show, maybe out of fear or out of the assurance, they don't want to show that there is that concern. You see, but they basically on the streets, these whole thing is not debated really seriously by the people. You get a few people maybe in the evening in coffee shops, like five people seated talking about it, but you're not going to see it really a trending subject that people are bothered and worried about, that they have to debate about it. No, it's only debated in the national media, like let's say the national radios, the national newspapers. These have been very, very active in reporting about what is going on in Congo, especially the radio stations, government-owned stations, televisions, and other private media. They have been very active in reporting what is about what's going on in Congo. But again, you're going to find that there's not going to be so much investigative content. They are going to report definitely what the Rwandan government thinks about the war in Congo. And that is a fact we cannot skip. The fact is that the Congolese Tutsis are being persecuted. That's a fact. And I think maybe, that's why they have taken up arms to really fight for their rights.
And Gonza, the recent AU leadership vote came to an end, and the AU Commission has new leadership. And this is coming at a time where there is contending with conflict in every corner of the continent, particularly in Eastern DRC, which we're talking about today. Should we be optimistic that the new leadership will bring a new approach to these pressing security challenges?
I personally, I'm not optimistic. The African Union has for long proven to be incompetent, even though there were certain reforms a few years ago to try to improve its efficiency. Both at the level of the summit, which where they elected the president of Angola as chair, but also at the commission level, they have proven that the ability of the African Union to influence issues, but also to force maybe negotiations is very limited. They still lack resources, independent resources, to be able to implement their programs. They are better to mediate conflict. It's good that the president of Angola was elected because he was all along the appointed mediator of the African Union on the this conflict in the DRC. Maybe we hope because they have merged the two processes, the Nairobi process and the Rwanda process, and put them all under the auspices of the African Union, and the summit in Dar es Salaam also decided that the African Union will appoint more mediators. It could probably lead to some results, but without addressing the core issues that are usually at the backbone of all conflicts, and without forcing the belligerent parties into the negotiating table, I don't have much hope that the African Union will achieve what has not been achieved before.
Right, that's on the Africa Union. Now on the European Union, Gonza, they also said over the weekend that it was in quotes urgently considering all options following the news of the M23 rebels' takeover of Bukavu. What does this tell us about the EU's position and approach to what's happening in Eastern DRC?
I think the EU approach is a bit outdated. You saw the response from the President Kagame, where he gave an interview with the journal African and said that he cannot tolerate anybody threatening him. The people of Rwanda, they take a lot of pride in that. It's a proud nation. So they don't think that somebody should be dictating to them, especially on issues concerned with their security. But also, secondly, Rwanda is in a much better position than it was in 2013, where the Europeans suspended aid. Economically, Rwanda is in a much better position. The conditions on the ground have significantly changed. It has diverse allies. The trade is different, but also the economic benefit of having major influence in Eastern Congo far outweighs what the European would cut in aid. Because the M23 is now controlling a population of more than 10 million people, and some of them are living in very vibrant business areas. But also the fact that whenever there is intervention by the West and they force an agreement, they don't look at the ultimate causes of why the conflict was there in the first place. And as I said earlier, there's intense pressure that, especially the people involved, those who are fighting, that this they should find a solution now for the last time, not postpone the conflict to the next decade or so. So, yes, the European Union may have its stand, but I don't think it will influence events on the ground this time.
Right. And Congo's Tshisekedi, speaking at the Munich Security Conference I just mentioned earlier, he also urged nations to, in quotes, blacklist Rwanda, condemning Kigali's expansionist ambitions. Why is Tshisekedi more determined to deal with international community than regional blocs regarding Congo's problems? I know we touched on this earlier. But is this a good move now that he's also even asking for sanctions on his neighbor?
Well, it's a good move. We'll be seeing it in the results. So far, there hasn't been any sanctions forthcoming. I know behind the scenes there's some pressure, definitely, because their brand is associated with Rwanda, with Rwanda, who may be concerned. The main Tshisekedi is pushing for that because on the ground, his troops are losing. The mercenaries brought in, the Southern Africans brought in to fight, they were found wanting. So it's one of the few options he has. But I think it is a misled direction that ignoring African solutions from fellow African leaders, and we go to so far away to Munich, where there are other bigger geopolitical issues, especially Ukraine. And I don't think you will get much attention or practical solutions. It also has to do with how the Congolese politics is played. Being out there in the international community is seen as a big deal. even when you follow Congolese citizens on social media, they are always talking about condemning, but at the end of the day, it does not provide solutions on the ground where people are suffering.
Mm. And has Rwanda been willing to solve the crisis in Eastern DRC and withdraw its allies' support for the M23 rebels?
There are two things, support, then and willing to solve the issue. Yes, I believe Rwanda has been willing, but withdrawing support from the M23 is not practical, I would think, because the two issues go hand to hand, because the Rwanda sees the M23, according to me, as a crucial ally in fighting the FDR, but also the coalition that had been assembled around Goma. You remember President of Burundi, Ndayishimiye, was in Kinshasa and said he will support Rwandan youth to move to cause regime change in Rwanda. Also, President Tshisekedi said it multiple times during the campaign, when he was campaigning. The Rwandan government took it very seriously. Most of the international community did not take the threat seriously, but those who understand what happens on the grassroots, the fact that there have been other rebel incursions into Rwanda from Burundi for several years, also from DRC. And also what people forget is that Rwandan special forces have been active in the DRC even before the M23 emerged. And actually, right, when it emerged, it was first seen as a nuisance. The Rwandans were very, very annoyed by the emergence of the M23 because at that time they had a very good working relations with the president, the government in Kinshasa, and special forces were operating behind the lines, especially targeting FDR commanders. They may want a solution that maybe establishes good relations, but also they want a decisive solution that solves the M23 problems once and for all. Because every time the issue emerges, automatically Rwanda will be blamed, whether they are supporting the M23 or they are not.
Right. Right. Now, just as we wrap up our discussion, coming back to you, Alex Ngarambe, Rwanda is home for over 200,000 Congolese refugees. Do you think, or have you maybe heard, if they are keen to return home in case the region is pacified?
I, on record and authoritatively, a few that I have spoken to, they are really expecting that once everything goes to plan, they'll be able to return home and till their land, go back to their livestock lifestyle, because for the last 20 years, they have really suffered and it has taken a toll on them.
All right. Thanks, Alex, for that. Now, as we wrap up with you, Gonza, they have entered Bukavu. M23 fighters were applauded by some residents on the streets or huddled on balconies. What does this really tell us about the change of guard in Eastern Congo?
My feeling is that this is a long-term change. Even if there are negotiations, M23 is in an advantage position. They will maintain administrative control of the territories they are holding because, as Alex was saying, that their parents, the refugees, who many of those fighting are from these camps, they are keen to resettle their families back there. And the only way they can do that is that they are the only ones who are guaranteeing security. So unlike before, when they would negotiate and withdraw, as we've been traced in Goma and now Bukavu, they most likely would establish permanent administration. That means it would take time for the Kinshasa government to have control in the east again. They are advancing towards the Minembwe and Murenge, where the Banyamurenge people come from. The most of the government armed forces have already withdrawn, and it could guarantee a new era there. I don't know how they will negotiate or manage tensions between the other tribes, the other ethnic groups in territories they control. But their main priority should be expanding membership, negotiating with local authorities, so that the people on the streets who welcome them celebrating see a change.
Thank you so much for joining us here on DW Africa Link podcast as we're discussing the situation in Eastern DRC. Political analyst Gonza, we thank you so much, and Alex Ngarambe. It should be recalled that last weekend at the Munich Security Conference, Tshisekedi pointed fingers at Kagame, claiming he has attacked the DRC and violated its territorial integrity. And I quote, We are determined to restore the integrity of our land, and we are getting there. Now it is up to the international community to do everything possible to prevent the conflict from spreading to the region. End of quote. Tshisekedi was telling DW. That's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but a part of our community, and your engagement can shape the direction of our discussions. We value your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. Please remember to follow so you can catch all of the Africa Link podcast episodes. This podcast was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabi. My name is Josie Mahachi. Thanks for listening. Until the next one, it's bye for now.
DW, Made for Minds.